Tanis Ann and the Poppins Ploy. Principal Nida, the quietly ambitious head of Shiratori Junior High, got up from his desk and went over to the window. Adjusting his spectacles slightly, he looked out across the playground towards the new science block, recently donated by a certain well-known company with local connections. He was a short, wiry man, frizzy-haired and dressed in a suit that hung so loosely on him that he seemed to move before it did. "The truth is, Mrs. Kawano," it pained him to admit, "we don't exactly understand what's going on or why." "Then how can you be so sure that May and Maya are involved?" asked their mother, who was perched on the edge of her seat on the other side of the desk. "Well, of course we can't, not conclusively. Although what indications there are do seem to point in that direction. That's why I invited you here today, to see if there was anything you could tell us that would help us to get to the bottom of it. May I ask, do your daughters possess a drone by any chance?" "A drone? No, of course not. Why do you ask?" The troubled head gave a sigh and returned to his desk. "A rather disturbing incident took place on Friday last," he explained. "Ashuya Kiriyama, one of the boys in your daughter's class, was terrorised by a drone on his way home from school. Apparently it intercepted him outside the gate and pursued him through the streets until he was forced to abandon his bicycle and hide under a parked car. A member of the public heard him whimpering." "Oh, my goodness," said Mrs. Kawano. "That's awful. But what has it to do with my daughters? As I say, there's not a drone in the house. If there were, I would know about it." "You'll forgive me for asking," he persevered, "but is there any other way that they might gain access to one? You see, this attack came in the wake of a bullying incident that was reported to me on Tuesday by their class teacher, Miss Tsukioka. Apparently, young Kiriyama pushed one of the girls during calligraphy class, not long after which your daughter May was heard to whisper something to him." "May?" said Mrs. Kawano, sitting to attention. "What did she say?" "Watch the skies," quoted Nida, peering at her pointedly over the rim of his spectacles. "Please understand, Mrs. Kawano," he then went on, "your daughter's academic abilities are beyond all doubt. Their maths and science scores are simply off the charts. And if this were an isolated incident, I might be able to overlook it. But it's merely the most recent in a series of unsettling events that points unwaveringly in their direction. Though, of course, there's never any concrete evidence to prove it. You may recall the electrical blackout that brought the school, and indeed the entire district, to a standstill during the winter term, or those anonymous online allegations that led to one of my senior members of staff losing his position. And then, of course, there's this. Throughout the meeting, an unknown object that was about the size and shape of a pineapple had been sitting on the desk between them, covered by a piece of cloth. Principal Nida now removed this to reveal a strange, pod-like device with three pipes coming off it. Your daughter's entry for the forthcoming science competition, he explained. Mrs. Kawano leant in to get a closer look. What is it? She asked. We've no idea. They say it's a drinks maker, but I don't think they really want us to know. Why do you say that? Asked their mother, cautiously touching one of the little nozzles. Because they've taken to speaking each other in a foreign language whenever they work on it. We weren't sure what language it was, said the principal, as he inspected the object from above. So their class teacher took it upon herself to record a sample and send it off to her friend at Wakeo University. Apparently it's a proto-Euphratian form of ancient Sumerian. So all right. They're a bit secretive. Girls often are, but there are other ways of finding out if you really want to know. Why don't you just try turning it on? Suggested Mrs. Kawano, reaching for the switch on her side. No, no, warned the principal, making a grab for her wrist. Don't do that. But it was too late. All at once, the machine began to emit a strange, rhythmical sound that was so deep and booming that it shook the furniture, shattered the teacups, and caused all the various certificates to fall off the walls. With the strip lights flickering above their heads, Mrs. Kawano and the principal were immobilised by it, their bodies shaking, their teeth rattling about in their skulls, until finally, and with one heroic effort, Mrs. Kawano managed to reach out with her right hand and hit the kill switch. As the device powered down, They were released from its grip and fell back into their chairs, the room around them in total disarray. Once he'd recovered, Principal Needer leapt to his feet with a speed and agility that was unusual for a man of his years, took a roll of tape from the drawer, ripped off a length with his teeth, and stuck it over the switch to make sure that what they just experienced never happened again. "I think I may know who's behind this," said Mrs. Kawano once she'd managed to collect herself. "I made the mistake of allowing her to take care of the girls once when I was called away on family business. Since then she's been a constant and malign influence on them. You should have seen the state they were in when she brought them back from the shop after buying yoghurt." "Who is this person?" asked the head, piling broken certificate frames one on top of the other. "My neighbour from across the street," said Mrs. Kawano. "Mrs. Tanny." At this, Principal Needer gave up trying to reattach the base to the under-12's basketball trophy and looked across at her. "Oh," he said, suddenly remembering his new science block. "Well, let's not be too hasty. After all, it would be wrong of us to jump to any unnecessary conclusions." "Let me assure you," insisted Mrs. K, "there's nothing unnecessary about it. That woman's got them twisted around her little finger. You should hear the way they talk about her. It's Mrs. Tanny says this and Mrs. Tanny says that. I'm sure they think she's practically perfect in every way." "Well, that's as maybe," said the head, who was more concerned about maintaining a healthy relationship between Tanny-san Industries and the school's annual income stream. "But I'm sure you'll agree that it would be wrong of me to allow this institution to be drawn into a private vendetta between you and your neighbour, particularly one based on jealousy. No, 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 that wouldn't do at all." "I am not jealous," snapped Mrs. Kawano with alarming vehemence. But then straight away she regretted the outburst and went back to picking up bits of broken glass and plastic. "Look, I know it sounds far-fetched," she went on in a calmer voice, "but I will prove it to you. And when I do, you will finally understand the full extent of that woman's pernicious influence." With this in mind, she returned home that afternoon, more determined than ever to keep a close eye on May and Mai, although there were few events in their busy social calendar that were not already closely monitored by her. Two stood out in particular. On Wednesday afternoons they had a piano lesson with Mrs. Shinagawa, and on Thursdays there was their ballet class. Until now they'd been allowed to attend these sessions unsupervised, because they both took place in the local neighbourhood. But on that particular Wednesday, Mrs. Kawano decided to follow them to their music teacher's house, albeit at a discreet distance. Her suspicions were first aroused when her daughters reached the end of the street, for instead of turning right, as they should have done, they went left and headed along the main road until they came to a trendy fashion boutique called Rabbit Hole, with several white rabbit mannequins standing in the display window. Here they waited until they were met by another pair of girls from Shiratori Junior High. Mrs. Kawano recognised them by sight, but couldn't put names to them. They too were sisters, and one of them was in her daughter's class. A few words were exchanged between the two groups of children. Then, to Mrs. Kawano's absolute astonishment, her girls handed over their music books. As soon as their friends had left, presumably to fill in for them at Mrs. Shinagawa's piano lesson, the twins each took a blue baseball cap out of their backpacks and put them on. Moments later, an unmarked van pulled up nearby, driven by none other than Tanny-san herself, similarly attired in a blue cap for some reason. The girls jumped into the cab next to her, and the three of them drove off. For a moment or two, poor Mrs. Kawano just stood there in a daze. She couldn't have been more flabbergasted if a herd of alien jellies had come wobbling down the street and asked her for directions to the Soap, Sand and Tabasco Museum. Barely conscious of the traffic, she headed back across the road into her own quiet neighbourhood. But then as she was approaching her house from the other side of the street, she happened to look up and see the corner of some angular object jutting out over the gable. She had never noticed that before. With her entire world view continuing to unravel, she let herself in and went up to the rectangular skylight on the first floor. Grabbing a chair, she climbed up, undid the catch, and leant out as far as she could. By leaning all the way over to the left, she was able to make out no less than 2 multi-rotor camera drones parked along the edge of the roof near the guttering. The little devils, she muttered to herself as she climbed back down again and marched into the girl's bedroom. Unlike that of any normal pair of 7-year-olds, the twins' room had a spare, symmetrical look about it, their perfectly made beds set against opposite walls, with 2 desks and computers at the far end, looking out onto the street towards Tanisan's house. Each desk had its own window, and hanging between them there was a sort of banner, on which was inscribed one of their favourite Mary Poppins quotes, written out in large capital letters on coloured paper. "I hate being good," it said. Not for the first time Mrs. Kawano sat down in front of one of the girls' laptops, convinced that the answers to all of her questions were to be found on the hard drives of those devices. However, she had so far failed to figure out the passwords for either of them, so they remained a locked box. When May and Mai arrived home at 7:30, dinner was waiting for them on the kitchen table. It was all Mrs. Kawano could do to keep herself from confronting them about what she discovered that afternoon, but she knew that if she acted without being in full possession of the facts, they would simply change their routines, which would make it all the more difficult to get to the bottom of what was really going on. So instead, she opted for the indirect approach, testing the waters with a few choice questions.
So how was Mrs. Shinagawa today? She asked, as she put out the gyoza and soy sauce.
Good, said Mai, nibbling on a rice ball.
And her husband?
Still dead, said May.
Oh, yes, their mother remembered. So tell me, she said, what piece have you been practising today?
The frog galliard, stated May, without looking up from her miso soup.
Oh, said their mother, I'd like to hear that. Why don't you play it for me while I wash the dishes?
Mrs. Kawano was expecting some excuse as to why that wasn't possible, but nothing of the sort. Once the twins had finished their dinner, they jumped up from the table and went racing through into the next room where the piano was kept. Their mother stood listening in the kitchen. She was surprised how well they knew the piece. But then she began to notice intermittent breaks in the melody, accompanied by footsteps and giggling. So she dried her hands and went through to the other room to find out what was going on. She was staggered to find May not sat but stood at the piano, playing away while Mai ran around the instrument in an anti-clockwise direction, leapfrogged over her sister's shoulders and took over at the keyboard, at which point May began running the opposite way and did the same, and so on. "What on earth is going on in here?" exclaimed Mrs. Kawano, utterly outraged. "Anyone would think you were a nightclub novelty act. Go and do your homework this instant." The following afternoon, she was better prepared. Instead of following them to their ballet class on foot, she took the family car and parked in a side street some distance down from the Rabbit Hole boutique. Just as before, May and Mai met their 2 friends at the appointed place, and tutus and leotards were handed over, at which point Mrs. Kawano made a mental note to take a photograph of her daughters to show their ballet teacher in order to ascertain whether they'd actually turned up for any of the lessons she'd been paying for all these months. Then, right on schedule, the delivery van driven by Tanisan pulled up nearby, so the twins donned their baseball caps and jumped in next to her. Mrs. Kawano started the family inbox and pulled out into the traffic, following the grey panel van as it headed along the road to Shinjuku. At the next set of lights, it turned down a side street and stopped outside a 3-story office block with blinds on the windows. Tanisan and the girls got out, went round to the back of the vehicle and pulled out 3 boxes. They then carried them through to the side entrance and left them there. Once they'd gone, Mrs. Kawano made her way across the street and rang the buzzer for the translation agency on the 3rd floor, telling them that she had a parcel that had to be signed for. Once inside, she proceeded directly to the ground floor offices of the now-defunct Hashigawa Employment Agency, recently acquired by Tanisan Industries. There, in the middle of the floor, lay the 3 boxes,
so she hurried over to the nearest one and undid the catches. It was empty, as were the other two. Empty boxes, she reflected as she drove home that evening to start dinner. Why on earth would anyone go to all the trouble of moving empty boxes around? It seemed to her that the more she delved into this mystery, the more opaque it became. But then early the following morning, just after her daughters had left for school, she had a breakthrough. She was walking past the door to their room with fresh towels for the bathroom when something caught her eye. It was to do with that highly inappropriate P.L. Travers quote that they had insisted on hanging above their desks against her wishes. "I hate being good." All of the letters, she noticed, were written in different coloured inks, apart from the first ones, which were in black. Could that be a clue, she wondered. There was only one way to find out. Seating herself at Mai's laptop, she entered them on the password screen. I-H-B-G. But that didn't open any files on its own. Something else was required. A symbol, perhaps, or a number. She then realised that each word was printed on a separate piece of coloured card. So after I-H-B-G, she entered a 4. And then all of a sudden, a whole list of files appeared on the screen, so she clicked onto the top one, labelled School Science Project. Meticulously rendered in felt-tip pens and crayons were the schematics for the device that she had mistakenly activated in Principal Nida's office. The only difference was that she now had a name for it, the Raijin Mark I Infrasonic Disruptor. It said in bright, cheerful, rainbow-coloured letters at the top of the page. Designed by Grade 2 students May and Mai Kawano, a sonic weapon for the purposes of immobilising inconvenient adults, bully boys and hostile foreign powers. It even had a setting to induce what was referred to in the annotations as the brown note, that much sought-after frequency of sound that would cause a person to soil themselves. For a while, Mrs. Kawano continued to scroll through the technical details of her daughter's pet science project, but then her smartphone rang. It was Mrs. Kimura, one of the other mothers from the school. "Kawano-san," she said, "where are you? It started." "What has?" asked Mrs. K, still preoccupied with her shocking discovery. "The science competition. They're announcing the winners." "But that's not until next Friday." "No, it's today," Mrs. Kimura assured her in hushed tones. "Hurry up and get here, for heaven's sake. Nida's been talking for 20 minutes non-stop. What a windbag." Mrs. Kawano put down the phone and bit her lip. Though still fairly confident that Principal Nida would have had the good sense to withdraw her daughter's entry from the competition, she was beset by a sense of foreboding. So she gathered together her things and headed out the front door, taking the shortcut to the school across the park. "And now we come to the prize for the most outstanding technical achievement in all categories," announced the principal as she emerged into the lobby of the new science block. Rows of chairs had been set out for the students and their parents, and right at the front there was a temporary stage from which the principal was addressing them all. Mrs. Kawano then happened to notice a mystery guest sitting behind him next to the science teacher, Mr. Baba. However, he or she was largely obscured by Nida himself. "And so to present this prize, I've invited along a very special guest today," he went on. "One who, by a happy quirk of fate, has decided to take a close personal interest in the affairs of this school. And who are we to question our good fortune? I refer, of course, to Mrs. Tanny, whom we all have to thank for this marvellous new building." "What?" exclaimed a stunned Mrs. K, stepping forward. At first, she couldn't be sure that it was her annoying neighbour they were applauding so enthusiastically, as she was barely recognisable. Rather than the trademark pink and white smock, she was wearing a smart business suit, and her hair was piled up on top of her head like an enormous onion. In fact, the only things more off-putting than that were the huge red lips, which would have looked more at home at the end of a bathroom plunger. "And the prize goes," announced Principal Nida, "to May and Mai Kawano for their climate-friendly drinks maker. An ingenious answer to the problem of global warming," he read out from a piece of card. "It extracts carbon dioxide from the atmosphere to make fizzy drinks in 3 fruity flavours." At this, the twins jumped up from their seats and went up onto the stage to receive their prize from a wobble-haired Tanisan. Then Mr. Baba wheeled their creation out on a trolley and began setting out some paper cups. "So if you'd like to step forward," invited Principal Nida, "May and Mai will be happy to explain how their device works. Afterwards, you'll have the opportunity to sample its products. I believe that the three flavours on offer are strawberry, passion fruit and mango. Isn't that right, girls?" "Don't touch that switch, Mr. Baba," barked Mrs. Kawano from the back of the room. "Why are you going along with this, Nida? You know yourself how dangerous that thing is." At this, all the other parents and children looked round in alarm, so Principal Nida did his best to make light of the situation. "Oh, ha-ha," he said, "slight misunderstanding, ladies and gentlemen. No need for concern. This is their proud mother, Mrs. Kawano, who I'm sure most of you already know. It is true that there were some minor concerns about this entry, but they've been resolved to my satisfaction." "It's all right, Mrs. Kawano," he said, addressing her directly. "It was merely a case of a few minor adjustments. It's quite safe now." "No, no, it's a trick, and she's in on it," insisted the twins' mother, pointing at Tanisan up on the stage. Yet in spite of her objections, Principal Nida gave the nod, so Mr. Baba reached for the switch on the front of the device. "Baba, I'm telling you, do not touch that control," warned Mrs. K. However, when she realised that he was going to go ahead with it anyway, she did the next best thing and grabbed the two nearest children, throwing a protective arm over them. "Everyone get down," she barked. "Cover your ears." Curiously enough, a few of them actually did, or almost did, not quite knowing who to believe. But then Mr. Baba threw the switch and pressed a button on top of the machine, at which point it gave a loud gurgle and a measure of fizzy mango juice squirted out of one of the little nozzles into the cup that he was holding underneath it. "You see," he said, holding it up for everyone to see, "perfectly harmless." Later that evening, May and Mai Kawano were back at home, sat in front of their computers, when there was a knock on the door. It was their father, who'd just come back from driving his wife to the train station. Entering sheepishly, he asked them to stop what they were doing and sat down on the edge of the bed. "Now listen, girls," he said, "there's something important I have to tell you, but I don't want you to get too upset. Your mother's not been very well recently, so she's gone to stay with your grandma for a while. So it'll just be you and me for the time being, although your friend, Mrs. Tanny, has kindly offered to help out. Oh, by the way," he hastily added, "I wouldn't tell your mother that." "What's wrong with Mummy, Daddy?" asked a wide-eyed Mai. "Is she sick?" "Oh, no, sweetheart, it's nothing like that." "Is it something we've done?" asked her sister with equal naivety. "No, of course not, darling. Why would you say that?" answered the kindly Mr. Kawano, who was horrified at the suggestion. "She's just a bit overwrought, that's all. She needs a little bit of time on her own, away from things. But listen, I don't want you to worry too much, and please, please do not get it into your heads that you are in any way responsible."
Okay, Daddy,
said the sisters. We won't. And so, absolved of all blame, they promptly turned back to their computer screens. As soon as their father was out of earshot, May jumped up and tore down the "I hate being good" banner that had been hanging above their desks for the last few weeks. "I thought Mother was never going to get those clues," she complained as she screwed it up and dropped it into the bin. "I don't see how we could have made them any easier." "Well, none of that matters now," answered her sister, who on the whole was the more philosophical of the two. "The main thing is that we're free to pursue our real agenda under the expert tutelage of Mrs. Tanny." "Quite," agreed May, as she went over and stood behind her sister so as to view the live drone feed on her computer screen. "In the meantime, there is this other matter to attend to. Have you located Shuya Kiriyama, our unpleasant classmate?" "Affirmative," said Mai. "Target acquired and locked on." "Very well," said her sister. "Activate the brown note frequency."